Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 122, being recorded on the 6th of April, 2016, with special guest Prashant Nayak. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale and Evan, and our special guest. Now, before we start talking to our guest, Prashant, let's just do a quick recap on a couple of things from last week. Kale, did I hear you right? You were at GPU Con. What is that all about?
Yeah, I'm here right now. It's in Silicon Valley, and it's sponsored by NVIDIA. So it's basically all things GPU. But what's interesting, I've been here a few times, and you know, a lot of times it's around movie studios, games, rendering. It's all about artificial intelligence, deep learning, big data. I mean, that's what the market is now. I mean, GPUs are exploding in that space. So there was a lot of big announcements this week from NVIDIA. They announced they're actually building a computer that has this new chip or new GPU that they have in it, which is ridiculously insane. I think it does 125 teraflops each one. And I believe the server that they have has four of these things in it.
Wow.
Ridiculous. I mean, it's just the ultimate in for something like machine learning or, you know, that kind of analytics. It's going to be a no-brainer. Pretty cool.
Great. You know what the first thing that came to my mind when you talked about all those teraflops is mining, Bitcoin mining.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I asked, yes, you can get some of that done real fast.
You know what's interesting, though? Like, yeah, the off-the-shelf stuff, like, from these big companies that they build is cool, but, like, the guys who are really, really serious about that, they have custom silicone. They build it themselves. Or had somebody build it, so it's pretty awesome.
That's great. And so you were presenting at that, or what?
I had a couple things. I mean, I'm here just basically because the N series that we've announced back in AzureCon.
Yep.
So Karan and some of the guys from the team was here, and we were kind of talking about that with people. We don't have an expo or anything here at this one. We were just more or less here as part of the Microsoft community. There's a few Microsoft guys here talking mostly about research. You know, the Microsoft research guys talking about the different frameworks we built for machine learning and that are being open source now and so, that kind of stuff.
So I didn't realize that machine learning was GPU driven.
Yeah, it wasn't in the past until they figured out that these frameworks could work really well in this. Like, you know, over the years, CUDA and that kind of stuff that NVIDIA wrote worked great for it. But
right.
Then it exploded. You know, as this stuff became bigger and bigger, the GPUs just became like, that's the way to go. We have to have these, you know.
Interesting. So then, you know, some of the machine learning stuff we're doing then goes hand. I guess I had been trying to get my head wrapped around exactly what we were doing the GPU series Azure stuff for. And I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of 3D rendering stuff that goes out there. There's, you know, 3D manipulation of things and, you know, thin clients for those kind of business. But I hadn't even thought about the machine learning piece. I guess that's probably the bigger driver for that.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. One is like pure analytics type load. So smart cars and these things about like self-driving cars. They showed a lot of that. And I never really thought about it that way. I thought that's going to take forever. You know, someday that will happen, but it's going to be a long time. And after I saw what they have, I'm like, that could probably happen next year. Like, that's like, they basically build a point cloud. They have these really ridiculous high-res cameras now that they can use off a car. And they're saying that, like, new cars that are, like, hybrid, they'll call them, not hybrid from gas, but hybrid from driving. Like, you can drive it, and then also the steering wheel can be tucked away, and it'll drive. But you drive it, and it learns. And what's awesome about the cloud in that is it's constantly pumping this data back up to the cloud, all the cars. So if you can imagine somewhere like Manhattan where there's tons of cars driving around, that thing could be learned very, very quickly because all those cars will share all that information. Like, it all goes up to the cloud, and all the cars learn from that, so they become the most expert drivers, like, instantly. I was like, wow. That's amazing. Wow. Like,
that's cool.
No more accidents, huh?
I don't know about that. But
it is. We are talking about New York here. I mean, come on, guys. Seriously.
It was really funny to watch the car. They said, like, we took a car out here and showed it and didn't teach it anything and just said go. Like, and it had predefined, because you can't write a program to tell a car how to drive. Like, it's like saying, I want to write a program for how a brain would work. It doesn't, you can't really do that. But what you can do is build a program that knows how to learn, and then it can teach itself. Like, so then you say, here's some parameters, operate within these parameters, and then you figure it out. And then they showed the car swerving all over the place, almost hitting trees and stuff, and then they come back like 2,000 hours later. The car's perfect, like right down the middle. It didn't even need lines on the road. It knew it could stay on this side of the road because that's the way everybody else was driving. If it went off-road, it could do that. I was like, that's pretty cool.
That is very, very cool.
That's amazing.
I'm glad you're there, Kale. Maybe we need to do a show on that at some point.
Yep.
All right. So, I guess after all the flurry of activity from last week at Build, this week was a little bit dry. I guess, Prashant, you were mentioning that Azure Stack Technical Preview 1 is out now, right? Is that what you said?
That is... Yes, that's actually yesterday it was announced. It's a technical preview 1, and in fact, you can go download the bits from Microsoft site. And it seems like they have improved some of the faster VM deployments, some better performance VM-related actions such as start and delete type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A few other incremental stability reliability improvements on the technical preview. And, of course, the big one is the updated extension for desired state and Docker for the, Azure perspective, Azure Container Services type of thing.
Okay. And the hardware requirements are still the same, right, there?
I don't want to go there, but yes.
I'm just looking at it right now. It doesn't look like that just changed in any way.
Hey, well, one thing
can be reduced.
One thing I saw this week that I didn't know about, we'll have to put this link in the link dump. I don't know if you guys saw it, but there's somebody that approached me about, like, they had an ARM template, and they said it works fine in Azure, and when I take it to Stack, it doesn't work. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe there's some sort of incompatibility because that stuff's still in, like, preview. They're still ramping it up. When I dug into it, we actually have a script out there now that you can run that's basically a template checker. So you can take your whatever worked in Azure, you can take it and run it in this thing, and it will basically tell you if it's good, if it's going to be okay on Stack, or if there's going to be something that needs to be tweaked.
Nice. Right. That could be handy. Yeah, we definitely need to put that in the show notes along with the download for the TP1. Okay, great. So that's definitely big news. I'm sure our friend Charles Joy is all over that, and he must be tweeting a storm by now. But let's get to Prashant. I really appreciate Prashant joining us today. Prashant, can you please give our listeners a quick background on what you do at Microsoft? I mean, I know we know each other from your days and services in MCS, but then you changed your role. So go ahead and give everybody an update on that.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. In fact, I'm a very very old listener since the day one that you guys have put together this Azure, and I'm a fan of it. Everywhere I go, I always look for this podcast. You guys are doing a great job here, and I learn a lot from a discussion that you guys put together. I started reading less because of your podcast. So a little bit of a background, since you mentioned, I started Microsoft 10 years ago, and I was in services organization. Then I switched to premier organization, where I still am a dedicated support engineer. Lately, I've been doing, since last 2 years, a lot of Azure-related engagements with customers, especially these couple of three, four months, I've been doing a lot of architecture type of services. We have a service called Premier Architecture Services, And in that, we kind of talk to customer, find out the blockers, and we kind of make them ready for cloud and talk about hybrid and things like that. So that's pretty much what I'm doing these days.
Okay. And what type of customers are these? Are these enterprise, mid-level? Like, what's the typical market?
So the typical market right now is enterprise, which we are targeting. But at the same time, we also have a lot of public sector customers, such as counties and public schools, also universities, and mainly large type of organization. Now, for SMB customer, we still haven't started yet, but soon we're also going to tap into that market as well.
So now it's interesting that you talk about the public sector type stuff. Is that because, again, those organizations tend to be very financially conscious, and you know they literally are working off everybody else's money, right? Because they're working off of taxpayer money, and they're looking for cost savings. Or I mean, I'm kind of surprised to hear PubSec as a kind of a customer base for you guys.
Yeah. So interesting is that obviously cost is definitely a factor, but also there's a lot of legacy systems that they want to kind of upgrade it and looking to cloud. To leverage some of the new innovations migrate that. And secondly, the other important factor is they want to just check it out how the cloud is. And a lot of customers that I work with, they know a little bit of Azure, but they don't know, first of all, they have a question of where do we start, right? And that's where it all begins. Although they understand there is a cloud and there is something that I can save money, but hey, can you actually walk us through some of the aspect of cloud and how we can move? Can our workload be moved? How easily can be moved? Things like that.
Okay. Prashant, I'll give you a tip. Next time someone asks you, where do we start with the cloud? You tell them, azpodcast.com. That's where you start with the cloud. Okay.
Absolutely. Will do.
But seriously, walk us through like a typical engagement like this, right? When you you meet such a customer and they're not sure where to go. Like, how do you typically approach working with these kind of customers? Like, what do you tackle first? Do you try to take an inventory of what they're doing right now, or find out, or kind of take them through some sort of a learning path?
So key to the success of this is we want to make sure that we scope it correctly. Typically what happens is technical account managers work with the customer, and they identify opportunity where a customer is definitely interested in looking at cloud, and this service is kind of, 5 days engagement, on-site engagement, where engineer goes and review their environment, also see and share data center related proven practices that we've been, leveraging for our own data center, such as MSIT's move to Azure. And there are also some of the workshops that we run after this collection of information. First of all, there are two types of information that we collect. One is the automated tool that we run. Now, this tool is it is publicly available, which is a virtual machine assessment tool that we run it and kind of identify some of the blockers, technical blockers, obviously, and then we share with the customer. We identify some gaps, and then we also discuss about what are their goals. Typically, we want to make it this as a 200 level type of engagement. We don't want to get into, hey, if there's any support related or any thing that's broken, those kind of things we don't. Typically handle during this engagement. But what we do is after the tool we run, we collect the data and we kind of identify if there is any blocker, then we basically go over that. And also we interview the customer. We interview business decision makers, technical decision makers, architects, and you know, if we scope a little bit wider, such as they have SharePoint, then we also meet with SharePoint administrator. And if there's SQL, for example, and they are interested in that as well, so we kind of meet with SQL DBA. So there are a bunch of folks that we talk to, and we identify what are those things that they are looking into and where they can actually save money, be efficient, and how easily can be remediated some of the blockers that we find out.
So, Prashant, is this, you know, and to some extent, this is a kind of a question to understand where you guys are going, but it sounds like, you know, this is mostly a kind of a traditional Microsoft workload today and throwing in Azure. But with where everything is going, are you guys starting to look at some of the open source workloads, or do you already look at the open source workloads that go with a lot of this cloud stuff?
So right now, we are just driving Active Directory first, which is pretty much most of our customers is using it today. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times customers has question that they have heard about something called Azure Active Directory, yep, and they want to kind of leverage that, and they are not sure whether what is this Azure Active Directory has to do with my Active Directory and how this all alignment happens. And then the second workload is, you know, right now we are just looking on a Microsoft workload for now. Mm-hmm. But if they have a Linux-based or any open source-based workload, we don't assess that, but we kind of take note on it, and we kind of give them, you know, roadmap that how you can go next step as to if they have, well, first of all, we don't have any, we don't identify any technical blockers for those open source, but we definitely kind of give them guidance that, hey, maybe next step you should look into, you know, X workload in Azure, which may align with you. Now, that's not part of Premier Architecture Services that we kind of set the right expectations, but the engineer is free to, you know, go ahead and based on his technical expertise, definitely can guide the customer.
Yeah, no, that makes sense because, I mean, it's getting really blurry, right? You know, we were just, you know, part of last week's announcement was the, you know, the Linux on Windows stuff, you know, and SQL Server on Linux. And, right, I mean, I can just imagine this world where you guys go in to one of these customers in a, you know, a year or so and say, oh, you're running SQL Server. Oh, and you're running SQL Server on Linux. Okay, that's different for us, at least, right?
So, absolutely.
Yeah, no,
but
makes
one
sense.
One thing I can also say that the, so a lot of customers today is definitely looking forward for understanding, getting readiness, preparing for, you know, vNext of their cloud, their data center, and how to optimize today's workload, or not only just workload, but a lot of customers want to just straight away have a mandate of reducing the footprint. So,
right.
And when they say that, it's a big undertaking, because sometimes they have a lot of, you know, virtual machines or footprint on the physical data centers, and sometimes they want to reduce, you know, their DR site to cloud only type of thing, mm-hmm. And then they, you know, then they have that vision, but the problem is, it's kind of, hey, I want to climb the Mount Everest, but hey, first of all, I need to get to the, you know, base first and then start walking and then take some training to track up there. So that's where it's all about starts. In this discussion during the Premier Architecture Services, we kind of give them, end of the engagement, we give them a kind of a step-by-step roadmap along with a mixed bag of things, such as we also provide additional services. And in additional services, it's not just because we want to sell something, but it's also about rightly aligning with their vision of, hey, maybe next 6 months, I want to move 20 virtual machines, for example. Then we do have MCS to have a jumpstart where a consultant comes in and help them to move those 20 VMs. And once they learn out of that experience, and then they do it their own, and then kind of give them a roadmap that, hey, this is how you migrate, this is how we learn during this process. And that's just one example, and there are many other things. For example, first of all, there's a big gap that most of the customer that I've seen is cloud readiness in the team itself. So
what do you mean by that?
So most of customers that I visited, the engineers of the technical team are not very much aware of how Azure works or how can we have a hybrid cloud. So the concepts are not there yet. And although they know everything is possible, but they don't know, technical details about it. So what we do is we also have another service which is grown very, in a big numbers these days. We call it Fast Starts, where engineers goes and give them an overview of different workloads. For example, IaaS as foundation services such as virtual machines, what is virtual network, what is storage, and things like that. And we also provide them labs during those Fast Starts. So this turned into another step of readiness. So once they get ready a little bit, then it's kind of making them more clear of their vision. Hey, maybe we should just start with the first dev test workload, or maybe a backup workload, or simply a storage workload. And so they go from there, and then they figure out themselves based on our guidance.
Nice. So you're basically, you literally are, you're helping them learn to fish, in essence, right? You teach them. You do some stuff for them to get them going, but really your intent is not to do everything for them. That's not your goal.
It's to get
something done and so that they understand the value and the potential, and then kind of set them on that path to everything else.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yep. Prashant, typically when you go for these hybrid solutions, you need some sort of network or connectivity between the customer's data center and or customer on customer's premises and Azure. And of course, we have options like ExpressRoute or what we call the site-to-site, right? Is that what it's called, the site-to-site connection, VPN? Getting an ExpressRoute connection is obviously something that takes a little bit of time, right? It's not something that can be done very quickly.
Right.
So how does that work in terms of how do the customers approach that initially? What do they do to enable that hybrid connectivity?
So the question, and I think the first of all, this premier architecture service that we're talking about is first, we're not giving technical solution right off the bat, right? That's not the goal, because within 5 days, it's kind of hard to figure out, hey, what's the best thing for you for next 6 months based on. But what we tell them is, a lot of customers has this skepticism of, I know I understand the cloud, but how do I connect? And just like you ask, we kind of give them an overview of what is ExpressRoute or what is site-to-site VPN. And that's where I said that we also bring in, if the customer is available to discuss with their network team, we bring in network team during that conversation, and we kind of whiteboard the session and show them, hey, this is how, this is possible. And when we run the assessment tool, we also see that anything that is blocking for moving that. In terms of network, we interview the network folks, and we kind of understand if there is anything that really blocking to go over the cloud, then we kind of identify as a gap analysis and then remediate based on further discussion. So that we don't have, if you have a specific question about ExpressRoute, during this discussion, we take the note and we provide more information after the fact.
That's when I get the email, right, Prashant?
Exactly.
Okay.
But sometimes site-to-site VPN, we kind of also demo them, because it's pretty much, I have demo environment, and I can basically show them, hey, this is how it works. And most of the customers, they easily grasp within 1 hour or two, they get it.
Okay. Great. So what are some of the other blockers that you're seeing, customers, like objections they're raising to moving to the cloud or moving to this hybrid environment?
Oh man, there are a significant number I've seen. There's the most of the time it's not less technical, more people, processes, right? A lot of times I've heard a customer has, and this probably different in a different customer scenarios, but most of the pattern that I've seen is that, first of all, they want to involve security folks, right? Because security wants to make sure everything is secure, and they need some sort of an education about, our cloud is fully compliant with all sort of, certification, and we have security practices and things like that. That's one thing. But the other thing is also a lot of times IT, and I've seen two type of school of thoughts is one thinking is IT is ready to move to the cloud, but they have to convince the upper management that, hey, we want to go to the cloud, which is, in other cases, it's the other way around. Customers, CIO have decided that, hey, I know that cloud can save us money and cost, and we want to be agile. And most of the time what I've seen is most of the customers are also very much looking into sort of a PaaS model where they want to get away from patching business, right? They don't want to keep the lights on, but they also want to innovate. And they want to market, be very competitive in the market. So what they also do is they kind of, go from the bottom, top bottom and push IT folks to, hey, go ahead and check it out what Azure is. And that's where they have, typical legacy thinking of, hey, I think I'm doing well, but because I've been told to look into the cloud, I'm here. So that's a people issue. Some of the other blockers, what I've seen is a lot of legacy systems such as Windows 2003. There's a lot of them, right? And Microsoft is not supporting it anymore. But many customers, have that policy of, hey, if it's working, don't fix it, right? And so we have to kind of educate them to say, hey, we don't support a Windows 2003 server operating system in our cloud. So, start looking into upgrading if you really want to leverage the cloud.
Let me jump in there. This is a little bit off subject, but this is just because this is a really common thing that I see customers do that, that server that they're saying don't touch. Don't change it, don't touch it. It's getting patches. It's, if it's got OS, if it's got any virus on it, that's changing. The network's changing underneath it. The application workload's changing on top of it. So it really isn't not changing. So just to reinforce what you're saying, keep it updated. Look at moving it to a new OS. It's not as static as they think it is. So, sorry. Just that every time I hear a customer say that, I just want to point out to them that it's a little bit of a fallacy to think that those servers really are static, because they're absolutely not.
Exactly, I agree on that. Yeah.
Hey, Prashant, do you see? You mentioned that a lot of guys are looking, or at least some of them are looking at using like PaaS because that's really where the biggest, financial benefit is and that kind of thing. Have you heard anybody like saying, yeah, that's great, but how can you protect me against Microsoft? Meaning, how can you make sure I don't get cloud lock in here? And I want to run this on multiple clouds. Have you heard those kind of things coming up where people say, I need to have a multi-cloud strategy and things?
So if I understand correctly, what you're saying is vendor lock-in. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah.
Not that I've heard during my architecture services deliveries, and maybe the reason is that I haven't. So the scope of this architecture services is mainly gearing towards the IaaS to begin with. We don't have anything to recommend yet in the services for PaaS. However, I always open to the discussion with the customer, but I haven't heard that term yet with the customer so far. And the other reason I would say, Kale, and maybe, and this is my limited experience with a limited number of customers, maybe there are some customers are already forward into PaaS model, but the customers that I've been working with, you know, they are still on premises. They are not even ready for IaaS, let alone forget PaaS, right?
Yeah. I've heard customers say to me, they would say, hey, I got this workload. It's running on, this really modern, you know, ASP.NET and all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, this would run really good on PaaS. And they're like, that's like rocket ships. I mean, we're back here right now. That's the future for us, you know. But it's not really. If you look at it, it's really not that far off. I mean,
But you know what, Kale, you bring up a good point, though. I'm actually working with a customer now on the side, and they've got AWS, and they're looking at Azure, and they asked us to come in and make sure and show them how Azure can do exactly the same thing AWS does, because they don't want to be locked into one particular cloud vendor. They want to have two of them on premises. I mean,
so they're talking about things like Cloud Foundry and those kind of things then?
No. They just want the same. They want to use the best of each platform, but they want both platforms. They want some applications running on AWS and some running on Azure.
So you're talking more diversity than avoiding lock-in.
And probably what it might be is if they have, I guess, Windows-style applications, traditionally ASP.NET style, they might put it on Azure. And Linux style, a LAMP style, they might put it on AWS. I don't know if that's what they're thinking. But as a matter of fact, this customer is they're a Linux Java customer. I just thought about that. So strike that. They want to have both cloud vendors in there, showing them how each of these things run. And the prime reason cited was they don't want vendor lock-in. So it's definitely a thing, and you know, Prashant, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that sometime in some of your customers.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet, but I won't be surprised.
Good. So are there any other blockers that come to mind besides the one you already mentioned?
So it's not a blocker, but it's kind of some of the risk identification that we do during this engagement. There's a lot of lack of clear migration path. There's a lot of lack of architectural guidance too. Still, I've seen a lot of customers. They still traditional thinking. Hey, I have Active Directory. I'm in a large black wall of my own organization, and I always want to be very tightly coupled with inside my own doors and things like that. And one of the other things we also see is resistance to change. Mm-hmm. And again, this is not technical blocker, but still, people are still not sure whether, hey, what is this all about? And and maybe it's because of lack of understanding of what cloud is bringing it to you. And that's where this whole engagement is all about, to kind of clarify some of those thinking.
Excellent. Great. So, how many of you are there? How big is the team? Do you guys?
So we're growing now because of the sheer demand of customers are actually seeking this type of engagement because they want to learn more, understand more. Right now, if I count on a number tentatively, and I'm going to be maybe off some numbers, but I would say in the U.S. at least, we have about 20 of us. I believe.
Wow.
And that is going to grow fast. We're still looking more people to engage and deliver this type of engagement.
Excellent. Well, that's a good one to know. Can you share with us some of the links to the site where our listeners can get more information on this service, Prashant? We'll put it in the show notes, okay?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep, and one thing I will also call out is for takeaway for customers is that I would definitely encourage them to, talk to their TAMs. Also identify, hey, maybe it doesn't cost that much. It's a five-day service, and all it costs is based on your premier contract. They will just charge you 5 days of hours for an engineer. But the end of the day, you get a number of recommendations. Example is, you know, we kind of give them, hey, first thing you should start looking into something called Cloud Center of Excellence, where you need to have a team that is, you know, forward-looking and helping you bridging the gap between your on-premises and maybe not bridging the gap, but have some kind of a hybrid and a few adaption and change management type of thinking that they should have, and also learn about a little bit about Azure governance model, because I've seen one customer, and this is funny because the customer has, and this is a real thing, the customer last year has a full stack, pretty much I would say a lot of VMs and connectivity and everything in AWS, because the ex-CIO has said to them, hey, let's just do AWS, and they have done that. Nothing wrong with the AWS perspective, but it was just a wild, wild west, and people will just spin up VMs, and all of a sudden, you get a big bill, and they were totally surprised that, hey, what happened to all these number of instances, and who's using it, and whatnot. And so they completely abandoned that model and came back to on-premises. This is totally surprising to me when I heard this. But the lesson learned is you should definitely think about cloud governance model also. So part of this engagement, we kind of also give them that opportunity to think about that.
Wow, I wonder what that bill was like. That sounds like
I'm not going to say the number.
Well, I know.
But wait a minute. But you know, I mean, regardless of that number, that's actually the thing that I have seen before is in the on-premises world, you were paying that anyway. It was embedded. It was embedded in the data center rather than to somebody's,
absolutely.
You know, somebody's bottom line, right? So it's
right. But the point is not just the money. But the point is nobody was really taking care of this subscription.
Right.
Yeah. You know, everybody was kind of, hey, I don't know. You know, I just have access to subscription. Let's just spin up some VMs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think
part of it. Forget about it.
Yeah, part of it is the budgeting aspect, right? The customer, look, when they have your own data center, you know what the costs are going to be up front. It's kind of amortized over time and things like that. Here, all of a sudden you get this, you know, one month it's very high, the other month it could be somewhere else, depending on if you're not taking care of things. It's just difficult for them to budget what the costs are going to be, I suppose.
Yep.
And so I told them a couple of times that, hey, maybe – you know, if you are really thinking of that, then we also coming up with a dev test type of workload that we have in Azure, where you can kind of have a cost threshold and what kind of VMs that you can run for your dev teams and things like that. And then when they see that, that's like, oh, why this was not there before? And, you know, it's kind of then easy type of working with the customer to think about, hey, I want to be running my shop very tightly for initial, and then once I learn about it, how to manage this, then it becomes easier.
That makes so much sense. Good tip over there, Prashant.
Absolutely.
All right, that's great. Guys, any more questions for Prashant?
No, this is great, Prashant. Thanks for kind of, I wasn't familiar with, you know, this world that you're living in now. It's great to get a nice overview.
Hey, I love this job because I need to talk to customers, and I learn a lot of stuff with them.
That's great. It's perfect. All right. Well, Prashant, again, appreciate your time. And we'll share all that information with our listeners through the show notes.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.